With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, you're about to listen to the latest episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, a podcast we've been doing with your support for about the last 4 or 5 years, something like that. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support us. This week on the Patreon episode, we are talking about Gibson Custom Shop. We'll be diving a little bit into the kind of financial woes that Gibson are under at the moment and examining how that's affecting the guitars that they're putting out through the custom shop. If you want to hear it, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Ah, yes.
Ah, so after an evening of some technical hitches, we are back. And with Matt Knight sounding better than ever, it sounds like you're in the room, Matty.
Oh, yeah, I'm there. I'm actually in the room. I'm with you.
I wish you were. Because...
Can we trade you for... wait for it. Joe Branton.
Joe, you just go and live in London. Matt, you move down here, and then, you know, all the good ones are together and the bad ones out on his own.
Sounds good.
So this poor week, Joe. I'm glad we're all in the room, or virtually in the room, because obviously...
Oh, yeah.
It's the Guitar Nerds quiz. It's quiz o'clock.
Quizageddon.
Keep going.
Quizopoly.
Keep going.
Quizectomy.
Quizial pursuit.
Oh, that's good.
Quiztine Aguilera.
Oh, I like that one.
It's
that's
a classic.
Good.
Quiztine Aguilera is a classic pub quiz name.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah,
no.
So,
quizzing in the name of.
As he won the last.
Smart Fellas. That's always my. That's the name I try and
push. The quiz and the Quizrius. Seven.
Seven, just the movie Seven. As he won the last quiz, I had to go back and check because I couldn't remember. Jay Cross is this time's quiz master.
That's right.
I'm really looking forward to all the
Are
rounds
you?
That you've prepared.
Yep. Yeah.
So what we got first? We've got general knowledge.
Or yeah, general like, knowledge is in there. Yeah.
Okay. What other rounds we got?
We've also got guess that Joe Branton quote.
Okay, good.
We've got... guess which pedal Matt Knight is talking about from the clip that I play. And we've got a really special round where I read a chapter from a book and you tell me how good it was. And then I'll give you some points.
I think what you're saying is you haven't done the quiz.
I haven't done the quiz, no.
Bit busy?
I've been very busy this week.
Just a bit too busy
in
for the
fairness,
quiz.
In fairness, we only remembered that it was the quiz last week.
Yeah, and that's a whole week to write a quiz.
That's not enough time to write a good quiz.
I mean, that is absolutely enough time to write
a quiz. Maybe enough time to write a good quiz if you've got nothing else going on in your life, Mark. I mean, also, you have to remember that I... actually do quite a lot of work at work.
You text me. I know I wouldn't do it at work ever, but you text me this week specifically to say I'm too skint to do anything. I can't go out.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
That would have been a prime opportunity to write
the
quiz.
Yeah, but then Maddie and I went for a walk. It was really nice.
I mean, you could write while you walk. Not heard that song. Write quiz while you walk.
We can't do the quiz next week either because we're going to The Guitar Show.
Yeah, next week we're at the Birmingham Guitar Show, and we'll have on-the-spot reporting. We won't have on-the-spot reporting. We'll have a report from the Guitar Show. So the quiz, because of J. Cross's laziness, is actually going to be in 2 weeks' time.
Yes.
And it
may be. We'll see.
It better be a bloody good quiz.
We'll see.
Yes.
It better be the best quiz we've ever done with sound clips, and you've got to work out how we do that.
Every time live. I do a quiz, it's great.
Does that mean this week is a regular episode, Mark Packham?
This week is a regular episode, because as well as that, we've got a lot of things to... a lot of stuff.
Joe Branton trying to steer the ship.
It's just
you give him 3 days of sobriety, and he thinks he's bloody David Letterman.
It is true, listeners. I have been sober for 3 days. I haven't drunk for 3 days, which is the first 3 days in 6 months. And we'll see how it goes. Which is a bit of an annoying time to do it because
see
I was planning
how it goes.
I was planning to do like a Birmingham guitar show sort of guitar report the bar.
Were you going to try and find someone different to have a booze off with?
It was a Birmingham booze.
After you and Steve from 60 Cycle Hum had your
booze
calamitous
Boozageddon.
Yeah, you were just going to try and fight. Were you just going to walk around? You know how sometimes you
Boozectomy.
See at these guitar shows, people walking around with a guitar that says with a sign that's like "This guitar's for sale. Come and make me an offer." Were you going to do that? Just walk around with a sign that said "I'll out drink anyone. Come and in. Make me an offer."
Or just a guitar that he's, you know, we've got off one of the manufacturers to loan or something, but the sign says "We'll trade for booze" on it. Something like that.
I would probably trade a guitar.
Yeah, that's how I'd
Well,
imagine.
Not anymore. Not anymore, because I am sober.
Let's see.
And ready for action.
See how long this lasts. Talk about ready. You're less red, which is a good sign.
Thanks, man. So what are we podcasting about this week?
I don't like this. Next, you're going to be like wearing a suit to turn up to these things. It's horrendous. Well, lots of interesting things. I'm glad you asked, Joe Branton, because we are going to be talking about Gibson's financial woes. Lots of issues on the Gibson front that have come up this week. Obviously, we're not going to provide any interesting insight, but we'll probably just talk about, you know, how the news article came out and all the things that people have said about it.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about that. We're also going to talk about Gibson's solution to the problem, the custom Boogie Van Les Pauls. So, you know, good stuff there. We've also got new guitars from Wild Audio, some amplification from Swart, a new pedal from Dusky Electronics, and everyone's favourite topic, short scale Spectre basses. Just, you know, we're really digging the niche now. It's good
and
fun.
We'll also be taking the rest of the remainder of the questions from last week where we did a question special.
We will. The first question this week is phenomenal, worth sticking around for. So with that, we should dive into a big old Gibson hole shaped pile of
nude calendar.
Good. You did a new calendar, didn't you?
I did do a new calendar once.
I really wish it was on the internet.
Well,
deja vu. Yeah.
Well, maybe
it was both cheeks from what I can remember.
Well, you know, turn the other one. Another cheap bites the dust.
Oh, that's horrendous. So, Gibson guitars, a topic that we've talked about many, many times, their financial worries. But actually, what seems to have gone from kind of internet rumour has now been picked up by all the major news outlets. So we're looking at Sky News, we're looking at...
NME,
got
Variety.
It.
Variety.
Yep.
The Independent.
Indeed.
Like there
was there in the, was it in the Independent?
It was in the Independent.
Right, okay, fine. So J. Cross, I think you've got some deets there. You got the original story.
Well, this all came out about a week ago when the Nashville Post, who one would expect is a relatively reliable source on Gibson, being as they're probably next door, they posted something saying that it was that Gibson were running out of time. Now, I saw this and I kind of ignored it because it's the same old stuff that we've been hearing week after week, year after year, the same stuff that people write on the internet about Gibson all the time. They've got too much debt and the Les Paul is wrong and this, that and the other. And
Les Paul is wrong.
I mean, you know, that's what people have been saying for...
People love to hate.
Forever. And so I kind of just ignored it. Didn't really pay any real mind to it. However, since all these other news agencies have been picking up on it, it does seem as though maybe there's something there.
This is the first time it's actually felt like credible. I mean, obviously, you know, people have come up with, you know, debt figures before and things like that. But it's always been, you know, Bong Lord 420 on the gear page. Yeah, sorry, Matty. I've just exposed your handle there.
The financial issues this time, I guess, are kind of backed up by Gibson, by Bill Lawrence leaving the company after 6 months.
Who was the CFO, the chief financial officer?
Yeah, who joined the company and then 6 months later immediately jumped ship when he realized. So the gist of it, to give, I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably read one of these articles as they're everywhere. But the gist of it is that that Gibson have 6 months until $375 million worth of their bank loans will be due, or their bonds reach maturity.
Yeah, we should say that we have no idea what we're talking about when it comes to financial stuff. We should preface any of this discussion with that.
I've got a degree in economics and I don't know what's going on.
Exactly. Exactly. So from what I can gather, the reason this has come up is that there's been like a report that's brought this all to light. And the report basically says that actually the guitar business is doing fine. The guitar business seems to be a profitable entity at the moment, which, you know, doesn't surprise me. They're kind of a heritage brand, and, you know, they although we have kind of picked out a few models that we perhaps don't particularly like, and there's, you know, there's guitars that are eye-wateringly expensive that we're not sure how anyone can afford. The guitar business, apart from that, it's still a Les Paul. They haven't done anything particularly crazy. People are always going to want a traditional style Les Paul in some way. There's always going to be an audience for that. So I'm kind of not surprised that the guitar business is fine. But what seems to have happened is, a little while ago, Gibson, I think, have kind of tried to diversify their portfolio. So you would protect yourself against the dip in the guitar market, for example, by not only selling guitars. So they've obviously gone, okay, we also need to get, you know, recording software and drums and consumer electronic products. You know, they own Onkyo and they own Tiak.
Do you mean that their BB King signature turntables aren't selling?
I mean, I'm not going to say that, Matty, but I suspect that might be part of the issue. Yeah, because they also own Stanton, I think.
They own Philips as well?
They actually don't anymore.
Oh,
there's
really
something weird about that, in that they sold some of it off, and Onkyo's all tied up as part of that.
I think they owned something like the soundbar division of Philips.
Yeah, there was something, there was something
actual
weird.
Actual Philips themselves.
Yeah.
Okay.
They own KRK as well, the monitors, you know, that were doing really, really well. I don't know how that's gone since Gibson have taken over. But essentially what the report says is that they haven't made the money back that they borrowed to buy these, all these things. So, you know, diversifying has essentially been a kind of failure. So interesting times. And I wouldn't like to speculate on what will happen next. Probably, and from doing a bit of reading on it today, but people who are much more of an expert than me on this kind of say, look, Gibson are not going away. There's not going to not be Gibson guitars for you to purchase. Probably what will happen is that, you know, they'll work out a way to manage this debt. And I think they've bought in some sort of financial firm to, like, a some sort of investment bank to basically oversee this process. Mm. And so they'll probably sort the debt out, whether that will be through, you know, changing the structure of the business or selling off the non-guitar parts of the business, you know, the non-profitable parts of the business. There will probably still be Gibson, whether it will be under the current ownership, restructured, as I just mentioned, or whether they sell off the guitar division and someone else buys Gibson. You know, it's happened in the past. You know,
they bought Gibson in 1992 for what? $2 million.
I think it was before that. I think it was 1989, and it was $5 million.
I mean, that's crazy.
It was a failing company at that point.
Yeah,
and it's $1 billion a year company now.
Exactly, exactly. And what people were saying was, they, from, you know, again reading some kind of expert stuff, is that if you've got a company that's turning over $1 billion, you don't really have a problem. What that means is that there definitely are parts of the business that you can restructure, sell off, or, you know, fold and not spend any more money on, that you'll be able to make that company profitable again. You know, in the industry that you are, if you're turning over, that they're in, if you're turning over $1 million, it's
billion
not
dollars.
$1 billion. It's not that
$100 billion.
Yeah, it's not that there's a fault in the industry. You can still make money there. It's that you need to restructure the company and somehow to service this debt, essentially. So, yeah. I think there's two things here. This seems more credible than it ever has before.
Yeah.
But secondly, I think there's a lot of scaremongering going around about, you know, you'll never be able to buy Gibson, or if you buy Gibson now, you know, what happens 6 months down the line? What's my warranty? I think you don't need to worry about any of that at all, because there's still going to be Gibson guitars in some way or another.
And also, Gibson have come up with the solution, as you pointed out, to this entire problem.
Indeed.
With the...
Well, this is the other bit of Gibson news. The Gibson Boogie Van Les Paul. Custom shop models. So, and along with the... what was the weird Star Trek one called? The Modern Flying V?
Yeah, the Modern V.
The Modern V. That got officially announced this week, but we've talked about that enough already. The other guitar that was at CES alongside that was this other custom shop model, the Boogie Van Les Paul. Joe Branton.
Actually, Matt Knight has got the...
Oh, Matt, what's the rundown?
Well... In the late 1970s, the custom van craze defined automotive culture in the same way that Gibson Les Paul Custom defined the sound of rock music. And then they went, well, 40 years later, why don't we just make a guitar that looks like the A-Team van? So basically, a Les Paul Custom in boogie van finishes, which I didn't actually know was a term in itself.
I don't think it is. I think it's just them trying to get away with not saying A-Team.
Well, they've called one the A-Squad, which I thought was...
Okay. I think boogie van is a thing. I think, like, not, yeah, definitely not in this country.
Was A-Squad the Channel 5 version of the show?
Yeah. The A-Squad.
basically, a 70s Les Paul custom. So small, sort of thin 70s headstock. Maple three-piece neck with a 70s volute, rich light fretboard, because obviously they're not using anything else at the moment. Apart from that, you're kind of a standard Les Paul custom, but they've gone for what they've called super 74 pickups in the neck and the bridge, so slightly more overwhelmed than usual.
A classic 70s sound.
Yeah. A chrome poker chip selector switch with chrome...
dome knobs.
Pickup surrounds.
Oh, right, yeah.
And, all chrome knobs as well with these rather fetching 70s boogie van finishes.
So how would you...
I actually think look amazing.
How would you describe the boogie van finish?
How would you describe it?
Well, it's sort
three
of...
Three colours.
Yeah. In a sort of...
Kind of like a funky...
Straight
kind of
line,
like
then a
flag.
Diagonal line. Yeah, a bit like a flag.
I mean, it looks like the A-Team van.
Yeah.
Is how you describe it.
But it's the A-Team van. The A-Team van's two colours, isn't it? It's black and red. These have got like a third...
No, it's not.
No, there's a brown in there.
Oh, is there?
The one that has been doing the rounds of the black guitar with the grey top and the red stripe.
Yep.
That's what the A-Team van...
Oh, is it? Okay, fine.
Yeah, so they actually come in five finishes. Stardust, which is silver, blue and red, like a royal blue, and then kind of like
cardinal red.
Yeah, cardinal red. Superhero, which looks like
Superman. It's a red, yellow and blue.
Yeah, it's red, yellow and blue, but it looks like a flag in the way they've put it on the... Well, the next one, Bell Bottom, which is black, red and yellow, is the German flag.
Right.
Street Race, which is black, dark blue and light blue, and then the A-Squad, which is chrome, red and black.
I think there's a fantastic... Yeah, they're a great selection of guitars. I mean, I wish they didn't come with the $5,000 price tag. That's maybe slightly...
Well, I mean, this is the other thing, isn't it? And it's something that we've talked about, and, you know, talking about what Gibson could do to maybe bolster their guitar department even further is, you know, they're going to do these models, and they spend so much time promoting them, and, you know, loads of press releases, and they're all over the, you know, the guitar forums and stuff. No one can actually afford them.
No.
So
if they did this as an £1,800 model in this finish, I think it would be very popular.
I'd
These
be into
look
it.
Cool. Yeah.
I'd be into
I think
it.
That'd be super cool. Well, but the problem is that they've just priced so many people out of the market that, I don't know, only a super rich A-Team fan is going to buy this. And that's
no one who's really into the A-Team is super rich.
You know, the guys who are in the... Mr. T, he'll probably get one.
I mean, think about all the gold that he had. You know, just trade some of that in for the Boogie Man.
He must have got loads of money for doing that Snickers advert.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Get some nuts.
What was that show that he was doing on Channel 5? World's Craziest Fools. Maybe I think he obviously made a mint out of that. So
World's Blankiest Blank.
The guitar itself is only £500 more than a normal Gibson Les Paul Custom right now.
Yeah. But I mean,
because I think people say $5,000 and in the UK you think, oh, that's loads of money. But actually, it's only the same price as a normal Les Paul Custom.
Sure. But I mean, does that not speak to how expensive a Les Paul Custom is at the moment?
But then I think they've always been about £3,000.
No.
They've been £3,000 for a long time.
Les Paul Customs have, I mean, other than a...
And you think a 58 and a 59 have been... I mean, even when I was working in a store 2 years ago, 58 standards were...
58.
4,000.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems like a lot of money. And for something that's so niche visually, you know, there's only going to be so many people that want this guitar. Why not just put this on a studio or something and, you know, just have a kind of fun guitar that people can get behind?
Yeah, I'm wondering whether they're just taking branding exercises kind of a bit too far.
Yeah, totally.
In one sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my... And this is a reason to put out a press release, I guess. You know, it's an expensive guitar with a kind of, in inverted commas, stupid finish, you know, because it's not a finish that's going to work for everyone.
I think if they'd just done... If it had black pickup surrounds and normal... like black knobs with the silver top, I'd be like, that's almost perfect. But it's just this bit too much chrome on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of chrome on it. I guess it's to go with that kind of what they call the boogie van vibe. Boogie van, that's hard to say that. Boogie van vibe. Great blues singer.
Yeah.
Boogie van vibe. So all in all, bit of a strange week for Gibson because obviously, you know, there has been a kind of lot of press about their financial worries. And then, if they were going to time that, they couldn't have picked a weirder time to release, put the press release out for these Boogie Van Les Pauls.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if they put out a guitar that everyone universally loved at a price that everyone can afford, then maybe people go, well, yeah, they're having problems with their consumer division. But at least they're making great guitars that I can buy. And instead they've gone, they're having problems with their consumer division. And they're making really, really weird guitars that no one can afford.
At least they didn't. At least this didn't happen at the time that they released that Swarovski Diamond SG.
One thing I've just seen on their website, because I was on their website looking at their current models, and one thing that definitely did make it to the press release, which is even weirder and more money, is the Year of the Dog Les Paul.
Yeah, I've seen that. I don't know what this is.
What are you talking about?
It's for the Chinese New Year, the Year of the Dog Les Paul.
Is that what year we're in?
Yeah.
Chrome red with gold scratch plate, all gold hardware and gold inlays, which the Chinese symbols are themed around good luck and fortune, and it's in gloss crimson red.
Yeah, I saw that. It's very...
My God, that is mental.
It's pretty full on. There's like a huge inlay on the body, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a huge inlay of a gold dog that's bolted down onto the front of the body. And the pickguard's not actually gold, it's just gold-coloured acrylic.
Well, there we go. It's plenty of good guitars.
That's $7,000, so, you know, that's...
What I don't understand is, at the custom shop end, they're doing stuff like that, which I kind of understand. You know, it's one-offs. They're not going to make that in the regular range. But then there's also really cool things that everyone would want to buy, which are like the Les Paul Juniors and Les Paul Specials they're doing, which look amazing. You know, you've got things like Shell Pink and like, an equivalent of like Surf Green and stuff on these really, really good double-cut Les Paul Specials. But they're still like... $3,000, you know, and
I'm wondering whether we should actually do a Patreon or a full episode on Gibson's website right now, because
let's do that today. Why don't we do that?
They've got some mental stuff on the website right now that I've not even seen a press release for or heard about, and I'm like, they've got neon colored hollow body, chambered Gibson Les Paul Customs with EMGs.
Yeah. This happened. That was released a couple of months ago. Absolute banger. I've been pushing to get some of those in.
Let's do that on the Patreon episode this week. Let's do a quick rundown of the weird Gibson custom shop stuff that's available. And it seems quite appropriate this week with all the news coming out. But
yes.
That's enough Gibson for now. We'll talk a bit more about that on Patreon. What I want to talk about now is the Wild Audio Blood Eagle. Jay Cross, I think you've got the details.
Yeah, so the Wild Audio stuff comes from, of course, the man himself.
Kim Wilde, the singer of Kids in America.
Yes.
Okay.
And as we all know, Kim Wilde, big fan of Explorers, especially Matt Black Explorers. No, this is, of course, Zach Wilde. You donut, Mark.
Sorry.
It was a funny joke, though.
It was a big joke.
It was a great joke.
Did.
No, so this is carrying on in the wide range of, increasing range of Zach Wilde audio guitars.
I am a massive fan of the previously released Wilde Audio Warhammer, specifically in Pelham Blue.
which is the SG Flying V.
Yeah, the SG top.
Which
Flying
was
V bottom.
Originally, didn't he have a Dean?
No, it was Epiphone.
It was an Epiphone.
Was it an Epiphone?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But this
right.
is better because this one's got like the headstock is like a spear and it's SG horns at the top, but more devilly. And then and then a Flying V bottom, and it's a weird, it's still that sort of circle thing, but the circles are a bit more complicated,
bit concentric,
yeah, and it's Pelham blue and black.
It is
mad. What more did you want with matte black EMGs?
I mean, some of the names of some of these guitars are just very, very mad.
The thing that weirds me out about this
Barbarian
this range, yeah, Barbarian Odin Grail is in
Odin,
a special
the
yeah.
Odin in Deathclaw Molasses.
So I've got a quiz for you next week. It's called 90s WWE Wrestler or Zach Wilde Guitar Finish.
Odin Grail, yeah.
But the thing is, actually, the price point of these, they're not like entry level. Considering they look, they've got that thing like you know, all those BC Rich. Like, do you remember when BC Rich did a guitar that tuned at the bridge, but they put a headstock on it anyway?
Yes, they didn't tune at the bridge. They were called, oh, I can't remember. You never tuned them. You put the right. strings on, and they just snapped into pitch.
Right. Okay, that's mad. Terrible. But you remember all those things like BC Rich make those sort of weird shapes because they're designed for a certain type of person, normally playing
speed loader. That's what they were called.
Right. Normally playing sort of in their bedroom. You know, applying a lot of makeup and wearing criminal damage jeans, which is cool.
Like, I think those are two different. You've just sullied two different
right,
demographics.
Okay, whatever. But anyway, they had a certain thing, and I understood the market for the BC Riches. That's why they were £200. These Zach Wilde guitars are $1,000.
Well, according to the according to the press release, according to the Music Radar press release, these are going to be $1,649, which is more than what it says on the website. So, just to give a bit of a rundown on these, they are Explorer-esque, although a little bit more pointy in one way,
definitely,
and actually quite subtle on the other way. I believe it or not, I actually quite like this. I'm not into the so there's one that they've released which is in a matte black with what looks like a gold binding. It's got kind of the aesthetics of an Eclipse. It looks like an ESP matte black Eclipse. That those sort of aesthetics. Block inlays, 8185s, hardtail. I actually think it looks quite nice.
It's sort of got the body shape of that. What was that? Kirk Hammett? No. What's the other fella?
Hetfield.
James Hetfield Explorer thing that ESP did that wasn't it was slightly offset from a regular Explorer.
Yeah, and
it looks
this
like that.
I think maybe is slightly offset as well, very slightly. But the colours aren't really for me. The matte black, I'm not hugely into. And the other finish that they've done is called Nordic Ice, which is it's like a flame maple in a sort of trans green with black sunburst kind of. And those finishes aren't particularly for me, but I quite like the shape of the guitar.
These look
and
really premium.
The headstock, I think, looks really nice as well, which is something you don't often get with more metal-orientated guitars. I think they're really nice. It's definitely, for me, the nicest of the the Wild Audio catalog, because a lot of them are kind of statement pieces, and I guess this is to a certain degree, but it's following a similar shape to something that we would all consider fairly traditional in a slightly avant-garde way, perhaps.
I agree. I think it's a bit more
really
tasteful.
I really like it. The problem for me would be the EMGs. I'm just never going to play guitar with 8185s.
Has everything from Wild Audio got those?
It does look like it, yeah. Just having a quick look through, it does look like they do.
They're nice, like matte black EMGs as well. I think they look these guitars look really premium. He's taken sort of quite a weird thing, this avant-garde shape, which is normally quite budget, and made them premium, which is quite cool. Everything about the spec is good. I love the oversized block inlays.
I'm just like, have you decided that you can't use that much rosewood? So, like, to get those side keys, you've
like
filled
most
of the frets in.
The finish on the neck as well. I like that they have the back of the headstock and the body, because they're all They're all through neck. So it's nice that the...
Is it through neck?
It might be glued neck. It might be glued neck. Yeah. It's nice that the finish kind of runs right up the heel and then moves to just sort of a plain maple for the whole neck. It just looks very premium, very well done. Nice attention to detail.
The design is very, very well done. Like you say, like there's different... When you're moving from a brand as an artist, you could go very, very wrong. And to be honest, I think the ones that are more Les Paul shaped are nowhere near as nice as this, because they do just look like a Zakk Wylde Les Paul, but like someone's just kind of like melted the top horn a little bit. Whereas this, you know, it's almost taken a pretty unique approach on the Explorer shape. You know, there's a few things on there that set it apart, like the beveled top and things like that. It just puts it far enough away from a regular Explorer that you're not kind of going, oh, that's just a real bad take on an Explorer shape.
Yeah,
it's,
I agree.
It's just got some unique bits to it.
I think it looks really nice. The logo is just a rather subtle W, which I think looks quite nice.
Yeah, that's the other thing. With these kind of, you know, people stepping away, it could be his whole signature.
Completely,
like
which is just, is too much. I really like this. I think it's a cool looking guitar. It's something interesting. It's something different. It's made in South Korea.
Not North Korea.
Not North Korea. Okay. No, it's made in South Korea. And all in all, I'm keen to see one of these in the flesh. I think it's an interesting looking guitar. And you know, you talk about the money, but to a certain degree, that's how much a new company like this needs to charge to make guitars of decent quality.
I did get to see one of these in the flesh, actually.
Oh, really?
Joss Allen bought one for about 5 minutes and brought it into to work when he worked with me rather than the competitor. But,
I thought, what, one of these Explorers?
Not one of these, but as in a Wild Audio.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it was. He bought the... I think there's like a normal SG model that they do.
I think that's the Barbarian.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, for all intents and purposes, these seem very well built.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
I mean, I can imagine they're kind of in the same region as, you know, the Chapman Pro stuff, and the Abassis are kind of in that sort of money,
aren't
they?
I don't think so, mate. I think the Abassis are.
Oh, they're mega money.
The Abassis are £3,500.
Oh, right. Okay, that's fine.
They're proper. Incidentally, whilst we're on it, well, even though it's not in the news, Abassi launched about 4 hours ago on their Instagram. They have just launched their online guitar builder.
Oh, right.
So go to Abassi Guitars and check that out. I haven't seen it myself yet, so I don't know what it includes. But
I love those builders. They're always fun.
You can spec up your own Abassi guitar on their website.
Nice, nice. A brand new amplifier from Swart Amplifier Company. Who's got the deets?
Yeah, it's not something that we talk... Well, it's not a brand we talk about a lot. I've mentioned them a couple of times. They make some very cool vintage tweedy kind of... amps, known for the Atomic Space Tone, famously used by the guitar player that played with Katy Perry for a short amount of time. I only know that because I remember researching and it was the only video available. But yeah, the Super Space Tone was what they were known for, kind of very vintage Fender. but with a modern take on it, I guess. So this one, their newest one, is a dual 6V6 or 6L6 power amp, 18 to 22 watt amplifier, depending on which side you go for, with valve rectifier, valve driven reverb, and tube bias tremolo. So very three-dimensional, warm-sounding amp that comes in a 1x12 or 2x10 combo with ceramic Alnico speakers. Ceramic or Alnico speakers. So, yeah, it's kind of like the ultimate in vintage amplifiers, I guess.
Do we know money-wise?
They're going to be about $2,000. And I remember there was only one store I remember seeing them in, and it was on Denmark Street, I believe, at the time.
So it might have been knocked down by now.
I did actually try one then, and I thought it was really, really good for a very vintage-feeling amplifier, because obviously all the old Fender stuff sounds amazing, but many people don't want to go out and gig it. I mean, you know, they don't want to risk it on the road. I know a friend of mine's got an old Tremolux from 63, and is even kind of scared to turn it on because he just doesn't want to have something go on it and then, you know, have to replace it, and it's not all original. So these are nice alternatives to people who obviously want to take that more kind of vintage feeling Fender style amplifier out on the road with a little bit more boutique, I guess.
I have seen them a couple of times in the flesh, and one thing that's really stuck out is the build quality on them. Obviously they sound amazing, and you know, it's definitely worth going to check out some demos and stuff, but yeah, just the build quality is phenomenal on the Swartz stuff.
Point-to-point hand-wired, yeah, very limited dealer network, I think, especially in the UK. I'm pretty sure they have... Oh, Coda Music is the only place you can buy them for.
Right.
In the UK. But yeah, very limited build runs, you know, small team of builders doing point-to-point hand-wired. Tolex looks amazing. They've got that real kind of 50s feel about them, but they do a whole range of kind of small 5-watt combos, great for recording on 5-watt heads, yeah, all the way up to the kind of 22 and 40 watt heads and combos.
Nice, always good to see new boutique amplifiers on the market, and Swartz stuff, just design wise I think is some of the best looking out there, absolutely. So a brand new boutique pedal, the Dusky Electronics Mandorla Boost. Who's got the information?
I'll talk about that one if you want.
Go on then.
Yeah, so it's pretty simple. I mean, it looks great. So the Mandorla Boost, it's based around MOSFET transistors. It's kind of like a 60s treble booster inspired boost pedal. Not the most exciting things, but I think these look cool, and it has the potential of sounding pretty cool. You can run it at 9 or 18 volts. Two controls, more, which is obviously volume, and meat.
how much meat do you want? More meat.
More meat. And meat, which is a bass control. So okay. It sounds great in the demo. They've put out like an official demo where the pedal itself is laid out on a bed of nuts. And
so it is.
Which is actually...
I can't work out the connection of why there's an almond on the front and then...
I don't know if mandorla means almond.
So someone Google the word mandorla and see what it brings up.
But anyway, so I think, yeah, in the video, certainly it sounds fantastic. I really want to get my hands on one and see what it's like.
Yeah, we've seen...
Do you know what? Speaking of boost pedals, you know what I've been spending a lot of time with?
Yourself?
The Lunastone, Microboost.
Oh, yes.
Which is absolutely cracking.
Yeah, I've not heard it yet.
I love Lunastone.
I was impressed by the total TODs.
Yeah.
What does it stand for?
The True Drives.
True Overdrive, that's it.
True Overdrive.
I was going to say Total Overdrive.
No, True Overdrive, and they do a 1 and a 2, and they're gorgeous. Like, there are pictures. Listeners, check them out. They're on our Instagram, at Guitar Nerds. But yeah, they were really gorgeously laid out, simple white pedals with oversized dual LEDs and like diagonally set... black circular rotary controls.
Yeah.
Really gorgeous pedals, the True Overdrives. But yeah, they've just released like a new line of a couple of additional drives in like a sparkle blue and a sparkle red that have a bit more on them. They're all like double drives, and this boost pedal which is cracking. Just a really simple like spark booster style, just one control, but a proper make gooder pedal. I think it sounds gorgeous. Like adds just the right amount of like low end with your sort of enhanced top end as you boost it, and it's a they're very well built they're very good looking, robust, well built micropedals, so totally cool. Worth a look.
Yeah, I'm up for that. We should get one of those in. Well, we've got the got the Lunar Stone on here, that, but also I'm interested in this Mandala boost. Jay, what's the deal with the Mandala?
Well, the short answer is that the word mandorla is Italian for almond.
Ah, okay.
But there's a bit more to it than that, in the and I just had to pull myself away from a bit of a Wikipedia hole here, in that a mandorla is also the frame that is used in Christian art a lot of the time, surrounding either the Virgin Mary or Jesus in old-timey art.
Old-timey art.
Yes.
Just, you know, in the old times.
The old times, yeah. Actually, very, quite interesting. And I'll be going back to that one later. I will bookmark that page. It seems quite interesting. And I know absolutely nothing about that side of, I don't know, art. I mean, I don't really know a huge amount about art either. But,
I actually know quite a lot about art. I know nothing about art, but I know a lot about art.
Yeah, I just, yeah. It's the frame around a religious figure that makes that sort of pop art. It's pop art, basically.
I sort of think that the pedal is probably named after the almond rather than the, you know,
well, considering there's an almond on the, on the pedal,
and not a Virgin Mary,
and it's not Virgin Mary, then I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think you're probably correct. Also, it appears to be wearing a jetpack of some sort.
Yeah, because it's being boosted.
I think the Virgin Mary would have looked better with the jetpack just going across the front of the pedal.
Before we stray down that path, maybe let's
talk about
blaspheme.
Stuff that's equally interesting.
Well, let's talk about things that are equally as ridiculous as the vision Matt has laid out.
So,
and something right up your street, Joe Branton.
Do you?
No,
like
no.
Whatever you're going to say, the answer is no.
Do you like Warwick? Are you small?
Or just far away?
Wait, Warwick Davis.
With that, Matt killed the podcast.
Okay,
I am small, and I like both Warwick basses and Warwick Davis.
Well, there you go then, because Spectre, that company that looked just like Warwick, have released their new Bantam range of short-scale electric basses. So, short-scale basses are obviously normally something quite defined by traditional things you think of. You think of the SG bass, you think of the Gretsch Junior Jets, the Hofner
Mustang.
Violin basses, the Mustang bass, yes. All of these things, all of these short-scale basses, they're always traditional, but if you're, you know, if you like a short scale bass, but you're more inclined towards a modern looking instrument, then Spectre may well have the answer for you with these Bantam instruments. So it's basically their standard their popular Euro shape, which is
popular by whose
I believe it's when it's made by Warwick, it's not the Corvette, it's the Streamer.
Yes,
yeah, so the Streamer by Warwick, or if it's made by Spectre, it's the Euro. Worth noting that it's a Spectre shape. Spectre actually sold it to Warwick, so it is a Spectre shape first, but yes, essentially the same body shape, a nice pair of active EMGs, which is something you don't normally get on a short scale bass, but yeah, a nice easy quick 30 inches of of bass neck. For goodness sake.
So this is right up your street, isn't it? Because it's, you know, ridiculous modern bass, right. Active pickups, you love those.
Yeah,
short scale.
No, it's actually not on my street.
I fit this into the overhead locker on a plane.
It's not travel, so it's not something that Joe's interested in.
I want my short-scale instruments to be traditional, my ridiculously long-scale instruments to be modern, and then I would accept either for a travel instrument.
Okay, fine. So what if this had a folding neck?
If it had a folding neck, you would be peeling me off of the ceiling.
I don't know what that means.
Well, I would be excited.
With that excitement...
Move away from this, whilst we're talking about the etymology of words...
Okay, that's generally what etymology is.
Completely, yes.
Where is this going?
I was trying to figure out what bantam is.
Joe Bantam
means Bo small, Bantam. Doesn't it?
Well, see, so I've heard of bantamweight, yep, obviously, which is the boxing category, but I just Googled what the word bantam actually is, and the Google definition is a chicken of a small breed.
Yeah.
The cock of which is noted for its aggression. It's an aggressive male chicken.
Talking about aggressive cocks, let's do some questions from the Facebook group. Joe Branton, give us the jingle.
Questions.
Rob says, turkey for Christmas this year or beef?
I don't understand why this is...
I'd rather have a bantam.
I'd rather have an aggressive chicken.
Why is this a question?
I don't know.
Here?
Well, so last week we asked for questions about anything. So it could have been guitar related or it could have been anything else.
Rob's this is decided, a hangover.
2.5 months past the date to ask us...
I mean, well, you could say that. Or you could say 9.5 months...
Maybe early.
In preparation. That is fairly organised, I have to say.
In all seriousness, I would prefer... I mean, turkeys, obviously, for me... I'll speak as a meat eater.
Well, Matt, are you still...
Are you vegetarian now? Or have you decided?
You what?
Nut roast, baby.
You're vegetarian still?
Yeah.
So this podcast is now two vegans, a vegetarian, and Mark Packham, who today has decided he's giving up processed sugar. I'm not sure that we're a particularly solid barometer for discovering whether chicken or beef, turkey or beef is the right thing to have for dinner.
Basically, if we were going to make a Christmas dinner that suited all of us, firstly, there'd be no meat involved in the dinner. I'm also trying to eat a low-fat diet in general, so that rules out a whole ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Plus, for the puddings, no processed sugar. Plus, also, I don't drink booze, so booze would be off the table.
No, booze would be on the table.
No. But if we're saying one that works for all of us.
Right, okay.
Anyone got any allergies that want to share?
Well, I mean...
I'm allergic to Joe Branton.
Yeah, I'm also...
So Joe Branton can't be there, which still doesn't help us with the food situation. But, in all honesty, though, turkey... I mean, Jay, you used to eat meat, and Joe, you used to eat meat, and Matt, you've only just given up. Can we all agree that turkey is one of the worst meats?
It's quite dry.
It's so dry.
Unless it's got bacon wrapped around it, then that adds to the juiciness of said turkey.
I just think it's a waste of a dinner because everything else on the Christmas dinner is top.
I mean, I don't. To be honest, I don't really remember because I haven't eaten meat for nearly half my life, for almost half my life. So pretty much my entire adult life, I've not. So thinking back to when I was a child, I had more pressing things going on at Christmas, like presents, and
Pokemon,
and Billy Bear Hand. And like trying to catch them all. You know, it's difficult, I don't remember being a big fan of turkey. But then also, you don't just want to have chicken, do you? Because you can have chicken whenever.
But it's also why Boxing Day, the day after Christmas Day, is...
That's great. Turkey sandwiches.
The best meal of the year.
Turkey sandwiches.
Yeah, because...
Fantastic.
Turkey, nice bit of white bread, butter, turkey, like the cold turkey from the day before, is a sandwich.
And then the soaked bit of gravy bread.
The moist maker.
The moist maker.
Exactly. Yeah. But then on the side, you've got the hams. You've also got probably a load of crisps that you can have.
Crisps?
Yeah.
Crisps?
Just on the table, like breadsticks and all the, you know.
Breadsticks?
Yeah.
In a sandwich?
No, not in a sandwich. I'm just saying on the side of the sandwich.
Right, okay.
You've also got things like crisps and breadsticks.
Do you use the breadsticks like chopsticks to eat
the
sandwich?
I often do, yeah. That is how I like to imbibe my Christmas dinner. Just a couple of breadsticks. I think we should move on.
Beef for Christmas dinner.
Yeah, I mean,
that's something
weird.
I've never heard of.
We should go back to the original question. Beef on Christmas Day? No way. The only beef I have is with my family.
because they didn't buy Pokemon Red.
Exactly. We're not eating that beef. That beef is to never be spoken about and buried far beneath the surface.
Yeah.
Just to simmer over ever so slightly
the
towards the end of the day.
The beef that we have is when someone inevitably cheats whilst playing Monopoly.
Yeah, that is ultimate beef.
Yeah.
Ultimate beef. Liam says, paint on guitars. Is the paint used on guitars now the same as in the 50s and 60s? Will today's guitars eventually be as old, weathered, cracked paint guitar, or will today's guitars last all through normal use? I should have really typed these up into a way that reads correctly.
Wow.
I think what Liam's saying is, will a guitar that you buy today react in the same way that a guitar from the 50s or 60s would if you have it for the same length of time? Who wants to take this?
I guess to jump in there real quick, sorry, Matty. I guess the answer to this is it depends on what guitar you buy.
Yeah.
If you go and buy a standard Strat, a Mexican guitar, and have it for 50 years and use it normally and don't drop it, it won't end up looking like a guitar from 1954 does now. Not because of the paint, but because of the lacquer that is used. So modern guitars in general have got a polyurethane lacquer, which is a much harder wearing, much cheaper material, and also much less toxic material to use.
And we should say that's basically like a plastic.
Yeah, completely. And it keeps a finish looking like it was the day that you bought it. Whereas... But that said, you do get guitars, so the higher-end Fenders and Gibsons and a lot of boutique builders will use nitrocellulose, which is, first of all, really, really difficult to actually put on, to administer, to work with, to put onto a guitar, partly because it's expensive, partly because it's just dangerous because of the process that you need to go through to actually get it onto the guitar. But if you buy a guitar that has that sort of lacquer on it, it probably will end up looking like a guitar from 1954 does now. That said, are you going to be able to play it?
Yeah, will you be alive then?
Completely.
We've talked about this before. It's almost always my question to people who are like, yeah, I'm only going to get a nitro guitar because, you know, after I've played it all the time, you know, I want it to look like an old guitar. And it's like, mate, you're 60 years old. You know, you're not going to be playing.
Well, I mean, even if you're not, you know, I want it to look like that now.
Buy
a relic.
Exactly. I'm too fickle. Like, I will just buy a new guitar next week and then...
Yeah,
and then I'm never going to get that guitar to the stage where it looks all cool and relic'd.
Yeah, so I guess the difference is in how the two materials wear. You know, polyurethane, if you bump a guitar against something that's got polyurethane finish, it will crack and parts of it potentially will just fall off in large chunks. Whereas if you knock something that's got a nitrocellulose finish, it will dent into the finish and the finish will kind of stay on there. It won't chip off as such. And... the difference in, you know, from playing, nitrocellulose will actually wear down. Like, you can wear it thinner. Whereas polyurethane, it doesn't do that. You can't wear it thinner as such because it's like a hard plastic. So that's the real difference. And I guess it's, you know, the majority of guitars now are made with polyurethane, whereas in, you know, the 50s and 60s, they were made with nitrocellulose. So that's the main difference, really.
I wonder if that is true, though. Like, all those Woolworths guitars, they... probably weren't nitro, were they?
Well, no, they're...
And Dan Electros and stuff.
I don't know, actually. I don't know. So, cheap guitars, I guess, probably would have been a plastic finish.
Yeah.
Whether it would have been polyurethane, I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, a lot of the time you see things like Dan Electro and they're just like painted wood, basically. There's not really a finish on there. So, let's move on. Stuart says, which batteries sound best? Matt Knight, have you got an answer for this one?
Fully charged ones tend to sound best in general.
Is there a brand or anything that people buy in the sort of nerdy pedal world if they're not using power supplies?
No, but I did read something once that a lot of techs who people have small pedal boards like John Five, and he has three pedals and always powers them off a battery. They do put a fresh 9-volt battery in every night, despite the fact that they only use it for 2 hours and the batteries wouldn't run out within 2 hours. Because a fresh 9-volt battery, I think, from the factory usually measures at about 9.6. But after a couple of hours use, it's generally under 9. So technically not getting the maximum amount of power needed for your pedal to run optimum strength.
So this is why people use batteries over a 9-volt power supply, is because you actually do get a slightly higher rating out of them, right? Yes. You get 9.6 volts rather than 9 volts.
Yeah.
Which is,
and basically, vintage pedals obviously use very little, but obviously none of them had a 9-volt power supply, so fresh batteries tend to sound better in older pedals. But now the case, obviously, with inbuilt transformers and voltage doubling and all sorts of crazy technical things that people can do, power supplies tend to sound better overall because they give you a more consistent power. But cheap batteries always sound rubbish, so spend your money wisely.
What I find funny is those kind of like power supplies that you have to put batteries into. And I think we saw Dan Electro doing one, but there are definitely there's other brands as well that do it, which it looks like a 9-volt power supply box that sits on your pedal board. But instead of plugging it into the mains, you actually slot 9-volt batteries into it, which I just find absolutely hilarious.
So strange.
I was watching, so I went to a gig a couple of weeks ago to see Josh Smith and Ariel Posen play, and his pedal board has a battery box underneath that powers some of his vintage fuzz pedals with 9-volt batteries.
Oh, that's cool.
Just because he prefers the sound, do you think? Or
because he prefers the sound of the 9-volt batteries rather than the power supply. And some of the old pedals, like say, either don't take batteries or with a slightly higher than 9-volt power, because I think Electro Harmonix power supplies are 9.6 volts. But what it is, it's connected via a mains that basically just has a relay on and off. So when you disconnect the mains, it disconnects all the batteries.
Yeah.
So you don't have to unplug the batteries every time that you're finished with it, which I thought was quite a clever little thing. But rechargeable batteries don't necessarily always work and sound different and weird. So it's better to just, if you are powering things on batteries, just buy decent Duracells or something.
Michael, and this will be the last question for tonight. Michael says, what is the best slash worst product you've seen with the most amount of snake oil? So products that have come in that are particularly memorable to you as, you know, for example, a salesman coming in and saying, this is going to change your life. This thing that I've got is going to completely change your playing, change your customers' playing. And you've looked at it and thought, this is utterly, utterly ridiculous. Let's go with, who wants to start? Who's got one?
I mean, J Cross is going to go for the Soundbrenner, and I'll never forget.
No, I'm not at all. I'm not at all, because I've not used one. You can do whatever you want with. The one for me, oh man, it is still current. Oh, I do
go on.
Feel bad talking about this, but the one that I never really understood.
Yeah.
Was the grip clip.
Okay, go on. What's the
grip
clip?
Remember the grip clip, which is a clip that clips around your strap.
Yeah.
And then you clip your guitar cable in to the clip so that you can have your guitar cable. Yeah.
The old grip clip.
Behind your guitar. But I just remember looking at it and thinking, well, why don't you just run your cable behind your strap? And the answer to that is, well, because now you can have it higher. I'm like, okay, right. I mean, it's £3. It is what it is. You know, you buy it if you need to. We did have them in the shop, and I didn't understand it. I've got to be honest with you. I never really understood why people... Oh, damn, I was hoping this wasn't current.
Yeah, no, someone's still selling them. People are still selling them.
Fair enough.
Joe Branton, have you got one?
Well, there are a couple of things that kind of spring to mind. I wish I could remember the name of one of them, but I saw it as a Kickstarter, as so many of the worst ideas are. And it was essentially a mitt. It was a mitt with six positions and... maybe a sort of 6x3.
When you say a mitt, you mean like a mitten, like a glove?
Yes, that sort of thing. Almost like a sort of mitt.
Okay.
And it had on the reverse of it, it had maybe a 6x3 grid, and you could place these little sort of rubber stoppers anywhere amongst them. And the idea was you could form chord handshapes by moving around these little rubber stoppers, and then rather than hurting your the commercial was about, you know, when you learn guitar, it hurts your fingers.
Yeah.
Why not use this mitt that you can position for one chord and then just slap your hand over the top of it. Of course, you could only really do it with like a bar shape that you could then move around the neck to sort of play some things. But man, I remember even the video for it, like the guy who was demonstrating it, and I was like, yeah, that's not even fretting properly. Like you can hear it not fretting properly. So it was super, super not fit for purpose, which I don't know if that's quite the same as snake oil, but it's certainly a massively unnecessary product. The other one, and you know, I've been solidly sort of behind it, like sort of right back since before Gear of the Year and when we sort of did actually see them a bit at NAMM, was the
you're having a stroke.
Yes. Yes, I am. No alcohol. The one about press, the one with your feet, the iPad on the floor that needed a printer.
Yes.
Polyexpressive.
The polyexpressive. There we go. Yeah, absolutely.
The one with the feet
that you put on the floor. Like, there's no other effects pedal fits that that definition. The one with the feet that you put on the floor.
I mean, that for me, like, perfectly good product. It just there were just some tweaks that they could have made for it, like, don't require people buying it to have to print A3 off a piece printer. Of A3. Yeah, that was sort of my major.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, I was going to ask Matt, have you got one?
I don't know if I have.
Oh,
really.
Come on, Matt. Not the jam stick. Not that guitar T-shirt. Not lemon oil.
But these aren't things.
What are you talking about? Lemon oil.
Lemon oil.
What are you talking about? Asking?
Sorry, Matt. What?
I mean, I would say the one that I was thinking of was, do you remember the guitar glove? You talking about mittens there, but do you remember it was like a sleeve, a fabric sleeve you put around your guitar to protect it from getting knocked?
And we had a few. Yeah, I do remember.
I was trying to think of products that people actually define that would change your guitar playing, like actual rather than terrible accessories.
Well, the reason that I'm saying that glove is because I remember the guy bringing them in and he was like, everyone's going to want one of these because, you know, you hang your guitar up on the wall at home, someone knocks into it and it gets a ding. With this, it was made of wetsuit material and it was like a body glove for the guitar. And I was like, no one... The reason that you hang a guitar on the wall is because you want to look at it as well as, you know, being able to play it. You want it to look like the guitar that you've bought, not that it's got a swimsuit on, like a little wetsuit around it.
We kept being asked to put the guitars that were on the wall in the guitar glove to protect them from getting knocked or whatever. And it's just like, this is just bonkers.
It wasn't good.
I have thought of one, actually, because I remember going to a Birmingham guitar show when they had a massive one at the NEC when I was about 15. And I remember walking up to a stand and a guy was like, how do you fancy a pick that will change the way your guitar sounds? I went, oh, well, you know, it's kind of new to guitar. I was like, yeah. And he's like, let me introduce you to the Jellyfish.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, this sounds like something I want to buy immediately.
The Jellyfish was a standard pick, so that the top bit they actually held was like a standard pick, but it had 10 little bits of metal. Like, basically, imagine cutting a string down so you had a really small piece of guitar string. And they poked out the bottom and they kind of went in a diagonal line. And the idea was that you played guitar with the Jellyfish and everything sounded like it had chorus in it because of the way the pick sounded against the strings. And he was like, sound like a 12 string, it will sound like a chorus, and it's a pick. And I think it cost me about £6.
Oh, you bought it?
Yeah, of course I did.
Have you still got the Jellyfish?
Like, of course I want the Jellyfish.
Have you still got it?
No, it's long gone.
Oh, that's
although,
a shame.
Saying that, maybe if it still exists, maybe I could buy one.
Unbelievable.
I have just found one.
If you Google it, you can. Yeah. Google Jellyfish pick.
Jay Cross, you've got one more aquatic-themed product that you want to bring to the table. I can see it on your screen right now.
Yeah, it was just after Matt talked about the Jellyfish that I remembered. It wasn't long after I started working in the shop. This is probably 2010. Planet Waves brought out this product called the Squid, which was a shoulder pad that you put over the top of your guitar strap and it just added a little bit of extra comfort and a little bit of extra padding to your guitar strap.
It was to stop it sliding
and
around.
And also, yeah, so it's called the Squid because it had these little circle sucker looking things.
It had suckers.
And it was to stop it from sliding around, as Mark says. And we had one of the Squid. We had one in the shop and we had it for ages. And
for years. Literally, it was four years.
We had it in the shop for absolutely ages. And it was just sort of a running joke. We would all try and sell the Squid. And nobody ever wanted to buy the Squid. And then one day, someone came in. I seem to remember, Mark, you and I were behind the till.
I think I was, yeah.
I think we were there, and this person came in and they said, "Listen, I've got a bit of a shoulder problem, and I really like playing my Les Paul, and I really love my Les Pauls, and they've got this shoulder problem, and they're just too heavy. Have you got anything that can help me?" And I went, "You know what, my friend, do you know what I've got for you? Let me show you." And I was so excited. I got the Squid down, and I showed it to the customer, and I said, "Have a look at this. This is the Squid. What this does is it just takes away all that pressure." And the guy was like, "Oh wow, I can't believe it. This is what I need in order to play." And I was like, "Amazing. I can't believe it. We finally found exactly the person for this product." The guy went, "Oh, that's amazing." He went, "Oh, I've got to have two." And I went, "Oh, I'm afraid we've only got one." And then he went, "I'm going to have to leave it then." And I went, "Well, no, because you can just... Why have you got to leave it?" And he was like, "Well, I can't. I've got two Les Pauls. I need two." And I went, "But it goes over the strap, so you can just chop and change." And he went, "No, listen, if you've only got one, I'm just going to have to leave it." He walked out, and we were left with the Squid. And I... Oh man,
the Squid is probably Squid.
That was a mad day.
I bet it's still there to this day.
Well, maybe. Squid.
With that, we should wrap up this podcast. Thank you for listening this week. If you want to hear more, as we said earlier in the pod, we are going to go and talk about the current top end of the Gibson catalog over on patreon.com/guitar nerds. patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. At the $5 a month tier, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, as well as access to mini series like Joe Branton's Rant On, and also some exclusive interviews as well. And at the $10 tier, you get added to our executive producer list, which Joe Branton will read every week, or he'll attempt to in one breath.
One breath.
The more names that we get on there, the harder it gets for him.
Not for
me. The funnier it gets for everyone. And you get the prestige of having your name squeaked out by Joe running out of breath after doing it for a minute or so.
Can I make a request this week? Could you do the backing track further away from the mics? I feel it's...
No.
I don't feel people are getting their money's worth. I don't think people can hear
I mean, it's because you do it in a stupid voice every week. Just do it in a normal voice.
I will orate as well as possible, Mark Packham.
I thought you were going to say that. You were going, "All right, I'm going to do it." What song are we doing?
I don't know.
I feel like we should do Rock Lobster to carry on in the tune, but I forgot.
Something by Fleetwood Mac.
Emery, James Baker, Christopher Ritz, Hussein Omar, Matt Roberts, Dame Lee, Derek Fritzer, Martin Cliff, Matt Davis, Aaron Sherman, Blake Ryan, Jake Gray, Christopher Lucian, Juan Gurrier, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Norman, Rob Grant, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Scottish Manchester, Steve Michael Blair, Tom Ross Cross, Brad Page, Katie Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie, and Gary Paul, Corrigan, Matt Cryan, Will Kerr, Scott O'Brien, Phil Thompson, Moore, Gary Cullen, on the I can read your names.
The more sober he gets, the more he's going to be able to do every week. It's going to be out running soon and like doing fitness stuff. Unbelievable. If you want to join in the conversation, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can also follow us on Twitter at Guitar Nerds and Instagram at Guitar Nerds. And you can see the video content that we do at youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. Thanks very much. If you want more Gibson content, do check out the Patreon. And if not, we will see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Bye.
Bye.